National Radio Club.
Mighty Xers, welcome to Market Scope. This month, Tim Hendel from way down south sent us a cassette to document a format change.
This is Tim Hendel in Huntsville, Alabama, speaking for Market Scope. I think one of the things that we all enjoy watching is when a station has a format change. I remember how excited I would get as a child when a station would have a format change or a call letter change, and it can still be pretty interesting to watch. Nowadays, a lot of stations just change from one format to another with hardly any announcements or previews, and they just leave the listener to wonder what happened. Well, this didn't happen with 1160 in Nashville. Ever since I came to North Alabama, 1160 in Nashville, Tennessee, has been WAMB, officially licensed to Donelson, a suburb of Nashville, carrying big band music. A few years ago, as the AM band was getting more stations, a brand new station came on 1200 in Nashville. It was WKDA, and they did Spanish. I was very surprised just after New Year's to discover that there was no more Spanish on 1200. 1200 and 1160 were simulcasting, both carrying the big band format, and I thought, this is really a waste of spectrum. Two stations in Nashville, right next to each other on the dial, carrying the same format, but, well, we have seen that before, haven't we? It wasn't long, though, before I discovered that a change was in the offing. I discovered a loop tape of promos running on WAMB, or what had been WAMB 1160, telling us that a new station was about to begin. Meanwhile, the big band stayed on 1200, and 1200 is doing a dual ID at the top of the hour, WKDA, WAMB, Nashville. Which leads me to think that 1200 is going to take the call WAMB as soon as the FCC approves the change. We were told of a new Christian format, and this was part of what is called the BOT radio network. As best I can determine, BOT is B-O-T-T, and it is the name of the owner, though reception isn't as clear as I would like, and I'm not sure of that. They said they have a station on 640 in the Memphis area. It's actually WCRV in Collierville, Tennessee. I can't really get that here because there's an Atlanta station also on 640, and neither one is actually listenable, although you can tell that they exist. And as one of the promos says, there are 30-some BOT stations in the United States, but I don't know what the other ones are. Christian format appears to be conservative right-wing Christian talk and preaching. Probably many of the programs that are heard on other Christian stations. But let's get to the promos. They were saying that on Friday, January 20th, at 1 p.m., the station was going to be dedicated and inaugurated. So I had my radio and my tape recorder ready, and I recorded a few of the promos, promos which had been running all that week. I used a Grundig Satellite 3400, which is an old analog receiver with a really excellent AM band, and I had it hooked to a rather mediocre outdoor long-wire antenna. The end result was reception that is about the equivalent of the GE Super Radio, so it'll give you an idea of how the station comes in here. I'm sorry reception wasn't better, but I hope you enjoy hearing these promos and the inauguration of the station, which seems to be using the call WCRT, though I couldn't be totally sure of the call. Some of the preachers who inaugurated the station gave little short sermons, and I'm not featuring all of the sermon for you, just enough to give you an idea of what they were saying.
It won't be long before 1 p.m. is here, and that's the moment we've all been waiting for. It's the time we've been working so hard to prepare for. It's the moment when our dedication broadcast begins, and AM 1160, your Christian radio voice for Nashville and Middle Tennessee begins. AM 1160 will be a source of quality Bible teaching and Christian news and information 24 hours a day. Please be sure to tune in and tell your friends. We're completing the finishing touches. Today is the day, and 1 p.m. is the appointed moment with a dedication broadcast of AM 1160. Hot Radio Network's newest radio station. Call your friends and ask them to listen with us this afternoon at 1.
One of the other promos tells us that this station is running 50,000 watts. And if they say it, it must be true. But it must also be true that they have a very directional antenna which does not favor our direction. We are 100 miles south of Nashville, and 50,000 watts should provide a stronger signal, unless we're in part of the null. Anyway, at 1 p.m. we heard a long tone, and then we heard the beginning of the station, and this is how it sounded.
The day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Friends, this is Ken Monroe, and I want to welcome you to the sound of Bach Radio Network, coming to you from Nashville, Tennessee, with 50,000 watts of power at AM 1160. From this day on, Bach Radio Network will serve Nashville and Middle Tennessee with America's finest Bible teachers and with Christian news and information programming 24 hours a day. It is our sincere prayer that this new, powerful superstation will become known as your Christian radio voice for Nashville and Middle Tennessee. For more than 10 years, BRN already served Western Tennessee from Memphis with another quality 50,000-watt Christian radio superstation at AM 640. BRN's growing Bible teaching network now covers over 30 million people with 35 broadcast stations located in 10 states and nationwide through the satellite service of Sky Angels Audio Channel 9781. Our audience also listens to BRN online worldwide at www.BachRadioNetwork.com. Now, at this very moment, we are expanding our coverage throughout Middle Tennessee, making it possible for even more people to hear quality Bible teaching and Christian information programming 24 hours a day. As you'll hear in a few moments from Dick Bach, it's been a long time coming. But thanks to the help and prayers of so many people, it is now finally here. And today is the day. And right now is the beginning hour. Now, with a special statement, during this celebration broadcast, during our first day on AM 1160, here's the founder and president of Bach Radio Network, Mr. Dick Bach.
Well, today is the day, and this hour has now arrived for us to thank God for His faithfulness. For it is, in reality, the Lord who has made this new Christian superstation possible. From the first day Bach Radio Network was started over 40 years ago in Kansas City, I knew very well, unless the Lord builds the house, we all will only labor in vain. If we should suppose it can be done apart from His divine leadership. Let me tell you something about Bach Radio Network. From the beginning, in 1962, I have felt our job is a service to the cause of Christ, and that can only be accomplished by getting the Word of God into the people of God. In other words, we want to feed His sheep and make His disciples. And we make no attempt to entertain our audience, but we do everything we know how to make our programming interesting to our audience with quality and integrity in all that we do. And lastly, we want to serve Him by serving His people. Our news and information programming will always be broadcast as an act of service. And we will only serve Him as we genuinely serve you, our listeners. In the months and in the years ahead, we look forward to being together each broadcast day. Well, thank you again for joining us on this dedication day.
thanks, Tim, for all of your efforts in catching all those interesting bits and pieces. Remember, if anything is happening or is outstanding in and around your market, why not share it with other audio service members via MarketScope? Send it to me, Phil Wayne, at 313 West Spring Street, Upper Sandusky, Ohio, 43351, 1652. All of us radio geeks would be thankful for your help. And now, here's Fred.
If you remember a couple months back, John Bowker put together a survey and was asking for input from the National Radio Club members on a variety of topics. And John has the results for us right now.
Well, thanks, Fred. Late last year, we solicited our subscribers' comments and ideas about our annual practice of holding a national convention for the NRC and DX Audio Service members. There had been a lot of discussion and email exchanges, so we felt it was time to ask some specific questions. And that was done in DX News Magazine, the new eDXN, and here on the DX Audio Service. At that time, I promised to summarize what came in without editing, and this is it. There were 15 respondents, and I've named them at the end of this report. So, if you did not respond and would now like to add comments, I'll see that the convention planners and hosts see your remarks. With respect to the basic idea of holding a national convention, all but two of the respondents felt it is still a great idea. The two who were hesitant mentioned great difficulty in traveling significant distances, plus the expense of such trips. No one said we should stop having national conventions, and more than half, however, suggested we should offer more support to regional conventions, since they involve less travel and usually are held only for one day in someone's home. So the cost of being with other DXers is greatly reduced by the regional get-togethers. I then asked where national conventions should be held. I was reminded by several members of an earlier practice of alternating the meetings, first to the east of the Mississippi River, and then the next year to the west. Several responders mentioned not holding successive conventions in the same state or even in the same region of the country. Off the beaten path was one comment. Provided it was near public transportation and, of course, had cheap hotels. In addition to places I had suggested in my poll questions, Nashville and Albuquerque were sites that were brought up, as well as places in California. More than one said we should leave it up to the volunteer host. The question of when the national meeting should be held was next, and there was absolutely no unanimity of opinion here, I can tell you. There is a connection with school calendars for some, but schools all over the country work on different schedules. Many start right after Labor Day, but just as many start in mid-late August. Should we meet in the autumn months at a summer resort, places where the hotel costs would be down? If we have some really fun things for the spouses to do, maybe midsummer would be a natural to tie in with a family vacation. Several said Labor Day weekend was the worst of all possible choices since there is so much traffic and the hotel costs are still at their peak for the summer people. One responder picked up on the idea of holding the convention at midweek to avoid weekend traffic, and another suggested we work with the winter SWL convention planners for their annual meeting in Pennsylvania. After all, we share many common interests, he pointed out. My final question dealt with the program for the convention. Here we reached a consensus with very little doubt. A 2 or 3 day convention is clearly the most desired. Anything less makes a long trip hardly worthwhile, and anything more than that is a bit too expensive and can get in the way of other vacation or absent from work planning. The interest in program content were a bit more varied. About half said they enjoy tours of local broadcast stations, and half said they prefer to learn more about DXing and stories about radio stations through talks and demonstrations and seminars. Everyone who thought of it mentioned that chatting with other DXers was the real primary reason for attending a convention. Now, these comments will be made available to the planners of conventions and any upcoming hosts. In fact, rather shortly, we are going to be putting out a call for hosts for the 2007 convention. So, get your thinking caps on. Now you know everything that I know about the reaction of our members as to what they're looking for in a convention. I want to thank each of the following for commenting in this poll. The names I have are Bob Antoniuk, Paul Burkhart, Carl Dabelstein, Tim Davison, Mark Durenberger, Russ Edmonds, Scott Feibusch, Harry Helms, Nancy Johnson, Jim Marmack, Ken Onischuk, Jim Renfrew, Fred Vobey, Ernest Wasilowski, and Paul Swearingen. If you'd thought you'd sent some comments to me and I didn't just read your name, please let me know. Here's how to do it. My address is John Bowker, B-O-W-K-E-R, P.O. Box 5192, Sun City Center, Florida, 33571, or by email to jbowker@tampabay.rr.com. Now, don't let any of this confuse you, because we still have the big convention this year in 2006 in Akron, Ohio, over the Labor Day weekend, and we're going to be giving you all the details on that very shortly.
This is Musings of the Members. The opinions are those of the speaker and do not represent the DX Audio Service, the National Radio Club, or its editors. Members may muse by calling the Action Line at 419-224-1609, 24 hours a day.
Hello, DXers. This is Ernie Wasilowski in Omaha. Finally, good news. My local KYDZ 1180, Bellevue, Nebraska, went silent at 12:05 a.m. on February 28th. I then logged WVLZ, Knoxville, Tennessee, WJNT, Pearl, Mississippi, and on 1190 WNWC in Sand Prairie, Wisconsin. See you all in Akron, Ohio for the NRC Convention. 73. Bye-bye.
Hello, fellow DXers. Wayne Ryan in Brantford, Ontario. Well, unfortunately, we lost Lee R., who was on CHML Hamilton for 37 years, also worked four stations in Ithaca, New York, and a station in Montreal before his great tenure in Hamilton. He was really a wonderful disc jockey, great radio personality. Milo Hamilton has written a book about his 60 years of radio broadcasting. I picked up KSTP in St. Paul, Minnesota this past Tuesday morning, February the 14th, and it came in clear as a bell. They were getting ready to go to Paul Harvey News. It was 9 o'clock their time. I've also picked up WTHU on 1360 out of Green Bay, Wisconsin. This was about 6 o'clock in the evening. WWKB in Buffalo has changed formats again. They're going to left-wing talk. And I certainly sympathize with Art Bell and his family on the loss of his wife.
This is Paul Burkhart from Watertown, Massachusetts. On the 15th of February, I have just found a station at 990 kilohertz that's in Spanish. I don't know what the name of the station is. I know it's not WLGZ in Rochester. I also found last week that there was a station apparently on the air at 991 kilocycles, but I couldn't hear the broadcast very well, but it went off the air the next day. So if somebody could please tell me where that Spanish station is at 990, that would be very much appreciated. Happy DXing to you all.
Hi, this is Mike Lance. One report, WJCC 1700 has been off the air, and I have a question. Whatever happened to the station that's supposed to come on in the Sweetwater area at 880? Are they coming on the air, and what are their call letters going to be? One other question. How about WROA 1390 in Mississippi? I used to be able to pick them up. Are they still beautiful music? To Mark Dornberger, was WCCO ever a pop station? And when did they go talk? And was KSTP ever a pop station? There was a former DJ, I don't know if he's still around, that used to work in Boston and also worked in Minneapolis by the name of Chuck Knapp. Are you familiar with him? Thanks for listening.
And this is Mark Dornberger in the Musings Control Room to answer some of Mike's questions and to mention that we're looking at why the phone system has been chopping off a word here and there as it did to Wayne Ryan. Well, Mike, WCCO never was considered a pop station, but rather a full-service radio station in that it did everything. Very heavy on news and weather, sports, information. Music was played, but more as a separator between commercials. And while it was often current, the music never really followed a Billboard chart or top 40 lists. So no, you would not call
WCCO AM, a pop music station. And yes, I know Chuck Knapp very well. I worked with him, in fact, at KSDP-FM. He is now one of the morning leaders in the market in ratings on a religious station for Northwestern College Radio. Chuck turned KSDP-FM into one of the highest-rated FM stations in the country in the 80s. And that was shortly after his great success in KSTP-AM. He made that into a pop station in the 1970s, KSTP, the music station. So the answer to your KSTP question was yes. KSTP-AM had been a traditional NBC network affiliate, and they'd played a good deal of music. But Knapp turned it into KSTP, the music station, in the 70s, and they did very well. When the KSTP brass realized the FM was bound for success, they followed industry trends and wisely removed KSTP AM from music competition and instead turned it into news talk. My good friend and Westinghouse news guy Art Schreiber built a solid news talk operation out of KSTP AM in the early 1980s, and the owner, Stanley Hubbard's daughter Ginny, took the station to its current success as a highly regarded news talk operation. And to Tim Hendel, who a couple of months ago asked about theoretical coverage expectations from Superpower, I have a lot of info on the Superpower license applications, but it's in a file cabinet back in Minnesota. And when I return there for the summer, I'll pull that stuff out and review it to see if there's a predicted coverage map. So, Tim, be patient, and I'll see what I can find.
Reno here from Jacksonville. As you know, on Sunday night, March 12th, I think it was, we had a storm in Springfield. WTAX AM and WDBR, their tower is still laying across Dirksen Parkway. They've been completely off. And this is Wednesday, March 15th, and Cool 101.9 has been running them almost since then, quite a few stations simulcast with WMAY on Sunday night and most of Monday. So it's been quite something for radio listeners as well as for the people involved in the storm. And they don't know when they're going to get WTAX and WDBR back on the air as of right now. Take care. Love DXAS.
Hello, DXers. Ken Anischuk here. And in March 06, and I'm recovering from chest congestion and cold. Hope this will turn out okay. A couple items I want to mention before I go into Major League Baseball. First was back in October, West Coast broadcaster Bill King died at the age of 78. He started his career way back in the late 1950s and worked until last October when he did Seattle Mariners baseball. He did a lot of West Coast games in football, baseball, Oakland, the Raiders, Seattle, you name it. He did a lot of teams, and he was very well known, very popular, and he'll be missed a lot by the West Coast fans out there, Bill King. Also, another national name that passed away last month was Kurt Gowdy, who was well known both as a broadcaster for the Boston Red Sox, New York Yankees, and did so many national broadcasts of baseball and football. I know his career started way back in 1944. It continued on with minor league baseball, then up to major league baseball with Boston and New York, and continuing on with national broadcasts in football, Super Bowls, American Sportsman Series, many television programs, and career lasted at least till the 1990s, and he unfortunately passed away of leukemia at the age of 86 recently. And from what I understand, they are going to put a statue outside of Fenway Park in his honor, which would be a great tribute to Kurt. Continuing here, in Major League Baseball for 2006, Chicago White Sox, the world champs, 670 WSCR, Ed Farmer and Ken Singleton. In Spanish, some broadcasts, 1200 WRTO. The Oakland Athletics have changed stations from 610 to 1550 KYCY with Ken Korak and Vince Contronio. It's some broadcasts in the area on 1220 KNTS. Texas Rangers renewed with 1080 KRLD with Eric Nadel and Victor Rojas. Spanish 1270 KFLC. Los Angeles Angels 710 KSPN with Rory Marcus and Terry Smith. Spanish 1020 KTNQ. Toronto Blue Jays 590 CJCL The Fan. I believe same announcers, Tom Cheek, Jerry Howarth. Detroit Tigers 1270 WXYT. Network, nice one, Jim Price and Dan Dickerson. Cleveland Indians on 1100 WTAM, Matt Underwood and Tom Hamilton. Seattle Mariners, 1000 KOMO, Dave Niehaus, Rick Riz, and Ron Fairley. Spanish, 1490 KBRO on a small network. Next, Baltimore on 1090 WBAL. With Joe Angel, Jim Hunter, and Fred Manfra, and in D.C. on 980 WTEM. Boston Red Sox 850 WEEI with Jerry Trupiano and Joe Castiglione. Kansas City Royals 810 WHB with Denny Matthews and Ryan Lefevre. After 7 p.m., the Samulcast on 97.3 KCXM, call the Max. Minnesota Twins, 830 WCCO, Herb Carneal, Dan Gladden, and John Gordon. New York Yankees, 880 WCBS, John Sterling and Susan Waldman. I'd like to hear her on tape sometime since she's the only female announcer in the majors. The Tampa Bay Devil Rays on 1250 WHNZ in a six-station network. Andy Freed and Dave Wells. There was some information on Spanish, but I couldn't find a flagship station. Next, the National League. The Atlanta Braves on 640 WGST and 96.1 WLKS with Skip Carey and Joe Simpson. The Phoenix Arizona Diamondbacks, English 620 KTAR, Tom Brenneman and Greg Schulte. Spanish 1400 KSUN. Chicago Cubs 720 WGN with Pat Hughes and Ron Santo home games. Andy Mazur joins Pat on the road, I believe. He does a good job, too. Denver, Colorado Rockies, 850 KOA and a 29-station network with Jeff Kingery and Jack Corgan. Cincinnati Reds, 700 WLW with Dave Stewart and Marty Brenneman. Houston Astros, 740 KTRH. I believe Milo Hamilton is last year at the mic. With assisted by Brett Dolan and Dave Raymond. Spanish 1010 KLAT. New York Mets 660 WFAN with Howie Rose and Ed Coleman. The Philadelphia Phils may have the same situation as last year. 1210 WPHT, Harry Callis and Chris Wheeler. Friday nights, they go to 610 WIP because of a Frank Sinatra program on Friday night on WPHT. I don't know if that's changed. Let me know. Pittsburgh Pirates, 1020 KDKA with Lanny Fortari, Greg Brown, and Steve Blass. Lanny Fortari's 30th year on the air eclipses Bob Prince, who was on the air for 28 years. Florida Marlins on 560 WQAM. With Dave Van Horn and Alan Roxy Bernstein, Spanish 1140 WQBA. St. Louis, 550 KTRS, they now own half the radio station, with Mike Shannon and John Rooney in a network. The Los Angeles Dodgers, 980 KFWB, with the usual Rick Vince Scully and Rick Monday. San Francisco, 680 KNBR and 13 stations. John Miller, When he's off on a network assignment, Greg Papa and Dave Fleming work together. Spanish, I got the announcers, but they wouldn't give me a station. What can I say? And finally, San Diego Padres, the only station with a Mexican flagship. 1090 XPRS, Ted Leitner and Jerry Coleman. Any corrections are welcome here at 815-774-0184. Thanks for listening, and talk to you again next time with anything else that comes up fresh. Talk to you later with DX.
Thanks, Ken. And what could be more fun than going to a ball game? Well, perhaps a National Radio Club convention. How about that, John Bowker?
Well, that sure is right, Fred, I'll have to say. We're going to start Friday, September 1st in the afternoon. We're putting the finishing touches on a program for that. And then Friday night will be one of the highlights of the weekend. We're going to be having a slide and sound show on the development of the radio networks. And from what I've heard, that could be a remarkable landmark in our convention programs. On Saturday, we have a pretty full day planned, but let me tell you, we are very sensitive to the poll that I just reported on earlier, and that poll shows that what the members like as much as anything is a chance to sit and talk about DX experiences and to meet new people and maybe play off them. They may have some good ideas about antennas or tuning or experiences of one kind or another. Saturday night will be the banquet. Saturday night will also be the formal meeting this year. And so all kinds of things about the club can be brought up. And then the auction, of course, will take us into the wee hours. And so we're looking for people to start collecting things now, and perhaps next month we'll tell you where to mail stuff for the auction if you can't bring it with you. On Sunday, we'll have the candy quiz. Those of you who've been to some of the conventions know about the candy quiz. That's where we ask you some trivia about broadcasting and DXing. And if you get it right, we just throw a piece of candy at you. That's been a lot of fun for the last couple of 3 years we've been doing it. And then the formal NRC examination. And whoever wins that has a year's free membership in the National Radio Club of their choice, be it the audio service or one of the other publications. So it's a lot of fun. You know what I would suggest, Fred? I'm going to give you a telephone number in a second. Make a phone call now and get a room reservation at the Best Western Hotel in Akron, Ohio. Because if you come in too late, you may not be in the block of rooms that we've reserved at this very special $59 rate, plus tax, of course. But here's the phone number to call, and I would urge you to make this call immediately. Area code 330-794-1050. And if you call them now and tell them you're with the National Radio Club, they'll give you one of the rooms in that block of rooms, I'm sure. Okay, Fred, we'll give you more next month.
Thanks, John. And it looks like Mike Lance has an early Christmas present if the FCC starts to crack down on pirate radio stations in Miami, Florida. This news story comes from Associated Press, titled, "Pirate Radio Interferes with Miami Pilots." Airline pilots departing from Miami International Airport are getting an earful of something unexpected. Hip-hop tunes from a pirate radio station that sometimes interferes with their communications with the control tower. The music comes on a pair of frequencies from a station that calls itself Da Streets. It's intermittent, not all day, every day, says Kathleen Bergen, a Federal Aviation Administration spokeswoman. But clear communications between air control and the pilots is a critical part of flying. Authorities traced the signals to an antenna at a nearby warehouse, but did not find the disc jockey, although they did confiscate equipment, including three computers and a CD player. Despite that discovery and the seizures, the broadcasts have continued, authorities said. Pilots who pick up the broadcast switch to a different frequency to speak with air traffic controllers, Bergen said. The Federal Aviation Administration says that it has conducted about 30 similar investigations of pirate broadcasts interfering with airport transmissions in the past decade. The Florida Department of Law Enforcement is helping with the investigation under a state law that went into effect a year ago. The law makes it a felony to interfere with signals from licensed public or commercial stations or to broadcast without a license. Kind of a sad note in the news, at least for Dr. Hill, who we interviewed here on the DX Audio Service about his appointment to the Federal Communications Commission. But Robert McDowell has been tapped by President Bush to fill the last vacant seat at the Federal Communications Commission. The White House announced on February 3rd that the president intends to nominate Robert McDowell, Senior Vice President and Assistant General Counsel at CompTel, to fill the vacant Republican seat at the Federal Communications Commission. The White House said McDowell will fill the remainder of a five-year term expiring June 30th of 2009, which is the remainder of the term of former FCC Commissioner Kathleen Abernathy. Abernathy left the commission in December. Prior to joining CompTel, McDowell served as the Executive Vice President and General Counsel at America Carriers Telecommunications Association, which later merged with CompTel. McDowell served as the outside Deputy General Counsel to ACTA while working at the telecommunications law firm of Hyland & Associates, P.C. McDowell graduated from Duke University in 1985 and then law school at the College of William & Mary. He ran unsuccessfully in 2003 for the Virginia House of Delegates to represent the state's 35th district. Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee Chairman Ted Stevens, Republican from Alaska, said last month that he suggested McDowell for consideration and would support his nomination. It's time now for our DX Change on the DX Audio Service, or should we call it DX Bay? Well, I'm cleaning up the studio and I found a few odds and ends that I'm selling to help finance my son's flying lessons, or those items hit the dumpster. Please save them from the dumpster. Here's the deal. It's not fair to say first come, first serve, since most people get their tapes weeks ahead of others. So here's how we'll work this. You make an offer. The auction starts at a dime. Your bid should not include postage, as we'll work that out after the auction. So let's say, for example, you bid $3 for an old answering machine. Well, then you owe me the $3 plus the postage to send it to you. Highest bid by April the 14th gets the item. If there's no bids, the items go to the dumpster. Sorry, no donations, unless you can come to my house and pick them up in person. Let's start it out with a box of 31 cassette tapes of Radio Netherlands Media Network shows from 1996. These tapes are mostly C60s and, as far as I know, contain the shows. Tapes can probably be shipped by USPS Priority Mail flat rate or by parcel post. Make a bid. I've got three computers, all AT-style keyboard and serial mouse computers. The keyboard and the mouse are not included. Pentium 1 style with hard drives, sound cards, video cards, CD-ROM, and tower case. The computers will have to be shipped by UPS Ground or UPickup. However, if you're just looking for the parts, the hard drives, the sound cards, video cards, and CD-ROM, we can yank those out and send them probably by Priority Mail or some cheap method. Make a bid. And finally, a pair of computer speakers. But wait! I didn't use them on a computer. You wonder what I did with those, huh? Okay, well, these speakers have self-contained amplifiers in them and a 1/8-inch plug that fits into the earpiece jack of a radio. Now, I use these speakers on my Sony Discman, a Walkman, or other devices where I want speaker sound rather than using my earphones. And these speakers come with a power cord, two speakers which can be separated by up to 8 feet, and 3-foot cord that goes to the radio. Make a bid. All right, that is our DX Change. Remember, if you have something to buy, sell, or trade, you can put it on the DX Change. Send a card or letter with your list of items, your terms, and then we'll read it on the DX Change.
On January 1st, 2002, KKOL 1300 kHz began operating from temporary facilities installed aboard the 175-foot cargo ship, the Coastal Ranger, moored in Seattle's Elliott Bay. This 1,000-watt transmitter facility was the only licensed broadcast station operating in the United States aboard a ship. Here's the story. KKOL AM 1300 first went on the air in the 1920s as KOL,
one of Seattle's first radio stations. For many years, the station's studio and transmitter were located on Harbor Island, just south of downtown Seattle, amid busy shipyards and stevedore operations. In the mid-1970s, the station abandoned the Harbor Island studios and the historic KOL call sign. The station continued to transmit from the aging 400-foot self-supporting tower on Harbor Island. In the mid-1990s, the Port of Seattle began aggressively upgrading and expanding their ship container operations on Harbor Island, and they needed the land occupied by the transmitter and tower facilities. In the summer of 2001, the Port of Seattle came to an agreement with Salem Communications, KKOL's owners, to abandon the Harbor Island transmitter facilities by January 1, 2002. An application was filed with the FCC for a new facility about 15 miles south of the Harbor Island site. To prevent the station from going dark while the new facility was being constructed, it was decided to search for a site for a temporary facility under the FCC's rules for special temporary authorization. The objective was to preserve as much of the original licensed coverage area as possible. Since a temporary site was likely to be inefficient, a location as near the original Harbor Island site in downtown Seattle as possible was desirable. Many towers and smokestacks were evaluated for use as a temporary site, but for various reasons, none appeared to be suitable. Enter Valcom. Several years ago, Valcom Limited, a Canadian manufacturer of fiberglass whip antennas, designed a special antenna for AM broadcast applications. The Valcom antennas are shorter than traditional towers and have proven use for maritime applications, and it was determined this type of antenna could be mounted on a steel-hulled vessel and moored in seawater for efficient AM broadcast coverage. A plan was developed to mount the Valcom fiberglass antenna on a steel-hulled ship and moor it to the pier at Harbor Island. The steel-hulled vessel, moored in the conductive seawater of the bay, would provide an efficient ground system, substituting for the traditional copper wire radial system. A search of the Seattle area's many waterfront docks and waterways was made for a suitable ship. The 175-foot cargo ship, the Coastal Ranger, was identified as a possible vessel. A lease for the boat and the necessary moorage for the boat near Harbor Island was obtained, and the ship was moored at the coastal facilities in the freshwater Lake Washington Ship Canal in the Ballard area of Seattle. A 74-foot Valcom antenna was tuned for 1300 kHz operation and shipped to the Ballard location. A Broadcast Electronics 2.5 kilowatt transmitter was also shipped to the site. A Valcom steel hinge plate was welded onto the aft deck. The plate was mounted on a 45-degree angle so the antenna could be assembled on the dock. The antenna was then raised using a boom crane mounted on a truck. A standard 20-foot cargo shipping container was lifted onto the aft deck and secured using deck retainer locks already in place. The double doors at the end of this container were replaced with a wood wall with a door and a ventilating fan installed. The BE transmitter was installed in this container, along with a rack for monitoring and remote control equipment. With the antenna and transmitter installed and secured, the ship was moved from the Ballard moorage through the Lake Washington Ship Canal locks to the new moorage on Elliott Bay. And the new maritime facility aboard the boat was turned on January 1, 2002. One concern of this operation was the effect of the tide levels. Elliott Bay gets more than 16-foot tide swings from time to time. It turned out that very little or no variation in field strength readings was detected, even at the extremes of the tide. Another concern was the effect of wind and waves as the boat pitched and rolled. But no variation in signal was observed. The facility's performance was outstanding. The signal from this temporary site was consistent and reliable and covered a significant percentage of the original licensed coverage area. This information was provided to his website by Jim Dahlke, the engineer who assembled and tested the project. For our Blinky brethren, there are some very cool pictures at the website. And that website is www.dalke.com/KKOL/. And that's the story on the January 1st, 2002 launch of KKOL 1300 in Seattle. This is Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service.
Thanks, Mark, for that interesting piece, and thanks again for helping out with Bill Hale's column while Bill gets his computer back in order. Well, that's about it. There is no Mo. It is Curly here behind the mic. And we're 21, so I think I'm going to go have a drink. So we'll see you in 30 days with more DX stuff. Remember, folks, get out and support radio.